is an interview for the Avon Heath SD Hutai Trust Oral History Project. Today is the 17th of May 2010. The interviewer is Michelle Bradley. The equipment being used is a Fostex digital recorder and lapel microphone. The interview is being recorded at 51 St Andrews Hill Road, St Andrews Hill, Christchurch, and Mr and Mrs Snowden's home. We are seated in the lounge. Today I'm interviewing Murray and Helen Snowden, and this is the third interviewee for Series 2, and this is Session 3. And today I'm going to complete the questions that I have for Murray and Helen, asking them about association with various organisations around the estuary, observations and opinions about recent history in association with the estuary. When I interviewed you on Friday, we talked a bit about events in the 1970s and the fact that your son Edward became very interested and involved in sailing, and that you took the role of Commodore in the early 70s, Murray. My understanding is that in the 1970s and 80s, that the estuary was showing some pretty obvious effects of pollution from the sewage effluent, sea lettuce, that it smelt really badly, and that people even reported it affecting the paint on their houses. Do you have recollections of it being apparent that the estuary was deteriorating, that the general environment was deteriorating?
Well, I can remember the quality of the water as seen was a whole lot more objectionable than it had been in earlier times. The types of scum and discoloration indicated something was wrong, and from what I can see now, it is improving since the introduction of the outflow arrangement and other precautions that seem to have been taken. You could see the scum on your boat, and you could look over the side and you could see patches of it as you went past.
Do you have anything to add?
Well, the smell was noticeable, particularly on a hot day when the tide was out. Didn't smell when it was in, but when it was out, it was could be very objectionable.
Were there any incidents of causing any kind of hazard to yachties?
Not that I can recall, no.
Do you recall that people started to react and want to do something about it, and what sort of reaction it set going, so to speak?
Well, I recall it being discussed at meetings, such as yacht club meetings and things like that, places like that. There were all sorts of the usual ideas put forward and so on, but there was great relief when it was decided that there would be an ocean outfall, which of course has taken a long time until now to be a reality.
Do Do you recall becoming involved with the Combined Estuary Association?
I certainly remember being involved with it and being a member of it as a, I'm trying to think of the right word, I came on behalf of the yacht club, the Mount Pleasant Yacht Club.
I think you were the from the Fish and Game Council appointed you there.
Oh, yes. I represented the Fish and Game Council on that too.
Mm.
But I also represented the yacht club, but whether I was the official representative, I may not have been.
You were Fish and Game.
Yes, yes. But at a meeting I could speak for, I could add my bit to the yacht club's view of the situation. Yes, that's right, I was officially the representative of the Fish and Game Council for the Canterbury region.
Mm. And did that group, do you remember, did that group have any concerns about the estuary? Or more that it was supporting what was already obvious concerns?
Yeah, well, it was supporting obvious concerns, and as there were two polluted rivers flowing into it, which did contain at one time and probably still had a few trout in them. That's the Heathcote and the Avon, of course. That was it was a major concern that the tide running in and out of those tidal rivers, the tidal reaches would be so become so poisoned that there would be no sustainability of acclimatized fish, which is what trout are. They're an acclimatized fish, they're not native. But whether native or acclimatized, the fish don't want to live in that sort of condition. And they don't want to go to sea if it's blocked off near the in the lower reaches that they have to pass through. By blocked off by an obnoxious presence of sewage and so on.
Mm. Whereabouts were the meetings held for the Combined Estuary Association?
They were held in the yacht club, weren't they? Yeah, I think they were held in the yacht club. Mm.
Do you have recollections of any particularly vocal personalities or characters who attended those meetings?
Yes.
Les Batchelor. Les Batchelor.
Oh, yes. Les Batchelor was a very powerful addition to the meetings.
And Kevin O'Connor.
Kevin O'Connor, yes. Yes. Les lives on the over on the Spit. You probably know that. Mm.
Do you remember any of the earlier chairmen?
Carl Horn was the first one.
Oh,
for
yes.
A while.
Yes, Carl Horn. Yes. Carl Horn. And then Les Batchelor, wasn't
it? No, the one down, he died. He was the headmaster at Sumner School originally.
Ernie Hanson.
Yes.
Mm. Who was it?
Bernie
Hanson. Oh, yes. Mm. I mainly remember Carl Horn and Les Batchelor.
Can you, I don't know who Carl Horn is. Was he a local?
He was a Canadian who was living in New Zealand, and I think he was very much connected with computer science, but he had various jobs, including being a taxi driver for a time. But he seems to have faded out. We don't know.
Don't know where.
And is that Horn, as in car horn, spelt like that?
May have an E on the end.
Might have an E on the end.
He was a Canadian, wasn't he? Yeah.
Now, you talked about power boating when you were even at high school, that power boating was popular in Monk's Bay and in the estuary. While you've been living here, have you been aware of power boats, and have they ever caused only any apparent concerns?
Only to a small extent over at Pleasant Point, but
the noise.
Well, some people might not like the noise. I don't know. It didn't worry me.
What about you, Mel?
Oh, only the fact that it was very noisy, particularly in an easterly wind blowing the sound over, and they were out probably every weekend, and then of course they got cut back to just several times a year. Oh, and there was a speed restriction put on.
I think
on
that's
all the
what.
Boats.
Yeah, I think that's what stopped it virtually.
Particularly jet skis.
Yes.
Now, you mentioned that there was discussion about the deteriorating state of the water. Do you think that the Yacht Club and the Combined Estuary Association saw, you know, that the councils were primarily responsible, and that they took issue with individuals and community groups having to be the conscience or the protagonist for bringing it up?
Yes, very much so. We were continually in efforts through communication to get something done, and I suppose the culmination is what we've had, what has happened now, that we've got an ocean out for. What exactly happens to what comes out of the ocean outfall, I don't know. Whether it drifts away to the vastness of the Pacific Ocean or whether it comes back inshore, I don't know.
But it was the scientists who got behind this whole matter and had people at different points of the estuary taking readings, taking samples right throughout the year, and they could had it, the whole thing tested and found that the levels of contamination were far too high. And that was what at last the council had to sit up and take notice of.
And that was Les Batchelor and Kevin O'Connor and various
others. Yes, and others. And volunteers who went down and took at certain points around the estuary.
Is there any ongoing issue with regards to the estuary, either on the water or around the edges, that is something that you see to be the council's responsibility that needs attention? Any current issues?
I don't think I'm aware of any current issues.
Well, we used to see every day there would be the water coming discharged from the sewage works with the, it was a kind of frothy, soapy look.
Oh, yes.
Remember that?
Yeah.
And then that would go, it would go out with the outgoing tide and then it would start. We don't get that now.
And you could see that from here?
Yes.
Mm. So that would be quite a volume, really?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We could see it.
It was like a...
And do you recall when that would that have been in the... would that have been quite some number of years ago?
Not so very many years ago. It was since the... They have no longer discharged.
Until recently.
Yes.
Mm, until recently.
Would you like to just describe what you can see? You might even want to stand up, but what's your view of the estuary from where you are? The features.
From where we live here?
Yes.
Well... My view of the estuary at the moment, with the tide in and it being a fairly dull day, everything looks perhaps as it should do. If it was a very sunny day, I might be able to say, well, there's something in the water there or something like that. But at the moment, it looks like a perfectly clear piece of water, but it's a dull day.
So the features there, starting on the far right, you can see the...
On the far right...
The midsection of the spit?
No, that's really the base of the spit from the... areas of the pine trees at Pleasant Point.
Opposite Pleasant Point, isn't it?
Mm, it's beyond Pleasant Point, probably a bit. Down to the Pleasant Point Yacht Club, which is at the mouth of the Avon. And everything looks okay there, and across in front of us, I can see where the outlets used to be from the sewage works, and there's nothing objectionable there. Round to the farmed paddocks where the stock are, and I can't see as far as Heathcote Bridge because of housing and trees.
Did your view go further in earlier years?
Oh yes.
Yes.
Yes, we, yes. Those trees hadn't grown up there and we could
those
see.
Those trees weren't there and that big tree there was much smaller.
We could see down to Mount Summers.
Yes, we could see around that far, yeah. Mm. Can't see much over the plains today. It's all misty.
Thanks for that, Murray.
Mm-hmm.
But we use the estuary as the movement on the estuary. If we look out and see which way the waves, if any, are going, we can tell the wind. You say, oh, it's an easterly, it's a southeasterly, it's a northerly, it's a sou'wester. So they tell us which way the wind's blowing,
course,
and we can tell the...
In my time here in this area, the housing has started on the sandhills, or the spit as we call it. I think I could say that in my earliest memories there weren't any houses there, but there might have been the odd one or two little huts or batches or something, more towards the Pleasant Point end.
And there was an annual fire on the loop in the Lupin.
Yes.
Caught fire.
Just about, it was virtually an annual event. that a fire would sweep from one end to the other, depending on the wind, of course, but it was quite an event, actually, because, again, depending on the wind, the smoke would come over red cliffs and you'd see great leaping flames. It was all lupin, dry lupins going up.
So this would be in the 1940s?
Yes, and into the 30s.
You mentioned being able to tell the way the wind was blowing from the estuary.
Mm.
What other pleasures or daily influence does the estuary have on you?
Well, I think it's different moods and it's patterns. When the tide was out and the river, in our case particularly the Heskett going down, and the different channels, those patterns are so, they're ever-changing and they're rather beautiful.
Mm.
And of course the congregation of birds in different places. Every season, the duck shooting season, suddenly we get an influx of ducks getting what they seem to know the time of the year, and they come and get away from the from the shooters.
Yeah.
So you find that you are very much aware of it as an element of your life.
Oh, very much.
First thing in the morning, you get up and have a look, and you say, "Oh yeah, I see it's a westerly wind this morning, or it's a." A northeaster, you know, straight away, or there's no wind. It's like a farmer getting up and looking at the sky. We get up and look at the water. We might look at the sky as well afterwards.
It's a very moody stretch of water. You never know when the wind will suddenly turn, change round, and that, of course, catches the yachts out.
And you can see a change coming. You can see if there's a change in the wind and there are yachts out there and they're sailing to a certain breeze and the breeze drops and it's going to come in from the west or something like that. And because you can see a ripple coming.
That's what the skilled yachtsmen learn, to see where the likely to be
where the change is coming.
A change or a particular breeze coming, and they adapt to that more quickly than others.
Mm.
And that's how they win the race.
And I'm sure there's been multiple occasions, but can you think of times when you just, it's awe-filled, the grandeur of looking out from where you live, that you are stop in your tracks because of the beauty that you see.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Sunsets, you know, with pink on the water.
Mm.
And
on a nice night with a full moon, you get a lovely track across the water.
And a flat calm. You just look at the... It's very, very pleasant.
Yes, we've got a particularly dull day today. In contrast to that.
Yes, it's all interesting though. It doesn't matter how rough it is or how flat it is or dull or bright. There's always something changing there.
Hmm.
Have you had any response to or? Are you aware that there's discussion about having a walkway and maybe that it would go around the entire perimeter of the estuary? Have you got any response to that?
For a long time there's been discussions and ideas about a walkway from Shag Rock to Heathcote Bridge virtually. At least to the beginning
around.
Of the, yeah. And the thing gets an airing from time to time, and I don't know where what it's at now, but parts of it have been actually constructed. I would understand that there was some difficulty along the Redcliffs area where there are houses meeting the water between Monk's Bay and Fisherman's Point, as we called it, which is the point at the end of Celia Street. One can understand certain difficulties arising in the minds of the people who live along that part where their actual properties meet the water. And there were schemes to construct a path outside those properties on the very edge of the water. I thought it was a great idea, but the people who lived along there probably didn't. I imagine they didn't anyway. And I know some of them didn't like it.
They didn't like the idea of people peering in at their backyards.
No, Well,
do you think having a walkway will increase the people of Christchurch and maybe visitors, their value and appreciation? Do you think it would be advantageous in that respect?
Oh, very much. Mm. As having been a keen tramper, we would have loved to be able to go right round to Sumner, or to walk right along to Scarborough. But of course, at points you had to take to the pavement further over.
Mm. It would be fairly easy, I would think, to have a walkway from Heathcote Bridge right round to Pleasant Point, because that's not all built on.
Mm.
Did you belong to the Friends group when it existed, the Friends of the Estuary group?
Yes. Through the Estuary Association, we had some connections there. There was, as far as I can remember, there was a kind of loose connection between the two groups. Yes.
I used to go to some of the meetings.
Mm.
That's where I met Elizabeth Stewart Jones.
Mm.
And have you become members of the Avon Heathcote Estuary Uhuta Trust?
No, because of combined estuary.
We.
I continue to have an association with that.
Well, you're a.
I'm
life
a life member.
Member
of the yacht club. You see, the Mount Pleasant Yacht Club, and that automatically put me involved with into a situation being involved with the other groups.
Where would you have last been to one of their meetings?
I stopped going regularly, except for the end of year meeting, about 3 years ago, 4 years ago, something like that.
And that's the Estuary Association that we're talking about?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm. Are you aware of any of the activity of the newly formed trust?
The Uhuta Trust? Not I don't think we're particularly up to date on that.
That's right.
We had the feeling that perhaps they're more involved with the conservation of birds and fish and so on, was perhaps the emphasis on the water quality not being the primary aim, but rather environmental.
I suppose it's all interconnected in a way, but well, after years and years of going to meetings concerned with the estuary and the district and so on, I just decided, well, I'm getting too old.
The outfill, the pipeline, it's apparent to people that the estuary environment appears to be cleaner,
yes,
even though it's a relatively recent change. There's a possibility, or quite a likely possibility, that fish populations will increase and shellfish.
I would think so, yes. I would think so.
Do you see problems arising with those increased populations?
We see any pretty well any day of the week, if you go along the causeway, you'll see people generally either of Asian or Polynesian background looking for shellfish and so on along right along the edge of the causeway when the tide's out for bait, I suppose.
Yeah, bait.
And there has been a bit of dissension about their removing rocks, which doesn't help.
What do you mean removing rocks?
Well, the edge of the causeway.
The edge of the causeway.
What, are they lifting them or are they actually doing
turning them over?
Turning them over to see what's living underneath
them. Why is that concerning people, do you think?
Well, it starts to undermine the causeway walls.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then you have the kayaking firms who are teaching people how to handle them, and they greatly value the culvert and one particular part where the tide, incoming tide, rushes in, so they practice on that side, and or the outgoing tide on the inner side round about Barnet Park. So they don't want that one touched. Oh, fair enough.
That's not Barnet Park.
Hmm?
Not Barnet Park.
Oh, not Barnet Park. Sorry.
McCormick's Bay.
McCormick's Bay Park. Mm.
And so over time that you've lived here, there will have been a considerable change to McCormick's Bay.
Oh, yes.
Quite a lot of restoration or reclamation.
Mm.
And do you have any comment to make on what's been developed there?
Oh, very acceptable. Because we knew Jeff Dutier, whose idea it was. There have been many schemes to fill the whole thing in and have a high school built there. And nobody could make up their mind. And then he came up with a scheme of keeping what was there and forming two islands in the middle for birds to
roost
to land
on.
And roost and so on. And that's come about. And you can see many sorts of different birds that go there during the seasons. It's quite a place to go and watch the birds. Not
well,
to mention
the dogs. before all this took place, the lagoon, or whatever you could call it, on the inside of the causeway was a place where people took their dogs, and that's fine. I've got nothing against dogs, but what I'm getting around to is that as the reclamation took place, the dogs were the dogs were then played on the reclamation instead of in the mud, which probably was a good thing for the owners because they didn't have to wash the dog afterwards. I know, because we had the dog ourselves. We used to take down there, or three dogs over the years. But there was a causeway from the main causeway, which our road and our tram lines were on, and the road still is. There was a subsidiary causeway went across the part of the bay. Mm. And it went from about a third of the way across, I'm sorry, if you take the present causeway came a third of the way towards town area, there was another causeway, joined it, went round the big circle and ended up over by where
Glenstray Road goes up. That was a quarry.
Yeah, towards that, yes.
You mean a half circle?
Mm. Yeah, a half circle, yeah.
So about the end of the land where the Mount Pleasant Community Centre is?
Not quite as far as that.
Not quite as far as that.
No.
Yeah. And that's right. And this causeway was to, in the earlier days, was to carry the rails and trucks from a big quarry which was up in the back of the McCormick's Bay there. Anyway, it gradually all started to disintegrate when it wasn't used.
Murray, did you ever see it used, that line?
Mm.
Or did it predate? It was just the remains of it.
Well, you and your friends went. Didn't you try to take a car or something?
Yes.
What would have pulled the trucks, do you think?
I don't know. No, I can't.
But
I can't recall that.
Were there?
Oh yes, yes.
Okay. Mm.
But as it disintegrated, it became just a rubbly old causeway and so on. And there were various ones of us who lived in Redcliffs who knew somebody who had an old car or two. One or two cars, and they were used to go from the causeway as it is across this thing and out onto McCormick's Bay Road, you see. I don't think it was a very good idea now, but
I bet you did at the time.
Oh yeah. It was great fun. Mm.
Did the owner of the car know?
Well, there were boys who were perhaps a bit older than me and had managed to acquire a car, and the owners of the cars were generally present, of course. That causeway, I presume, was used in building the main causeway, because it brought the rock from the quarry out to the main causeway. Yeah.
Well, the last question that I have for you is about roading, and you've seen a lot of change, since growing up in the cliffs.
Yeah.
In initially the tram, and then the roading being increased with the causeway, but that the suburbs have these suburbs out this way, what is it, east, southeast Christchurch?
Southeast.
Yeah,
have grown in, substantially over the time that you've lived here.
Mm.
Do you have concerns about the build-up of traffic, or are there issues for you living on the hill with this current volume of traffic going past the bottom of the hill?
Oh, yes. It's there are times of the day where takes you quite a while to get off the hill, say at the foot of St Andrews Hill Road. We have various other little tracks and roads we can get out by with maybe not quite such a build-up.
Well, the thing is that if I want to go down to Redcliffs, and it's this turning right that's very difficult.
Mm.
One way you can do it is to go to the bottom of the hill, go as if you're going round to town, and then turn off at the road on the estuary side.
Is that opposite the Bowling Green?
No, you're further back than that. You go and past the service station and turning right along the water front then, and then coming back again. Well, that's quite an extra bit to have to do.
But so that's for you to turn right. You need to come turn off the hill, turn left, go across the bridge, and then do a U-turn.
Go right round the big high building. There's a road. And then come back. But we find that if we go down the Bray, which is the road down there, and you've only got two direct, left and right to watch, and then there's always a gap, fortunately, because of traffic lights further up, and you can get across, because if you go down to the bottom of Mount Pleasant Road, you have not only the traffic coming across the causeway, you have people coming out of McCormick's Bay, you're watching that, and you've got to watch your left-hand side coming from town, and it's very frustrating at times, and you're just about to go and there's a cyclist coming along, so you wait another cycle. It depends on the time of the day. You've got to time it.
So you've got those three flows of traffic, one from the city, one from Redcliffs, and one from McCormick's Bay. Are you aware of action being taken to make it easier for you?
They still advocate this going, joining the stream at the bottom, going right round. That's quite a performance in order to turn right. And people from...
You're being encouraged to turn into the city to get to Redcliffs.
Yeah.
How have you been received information about that?
That's often, in the paper and that sort of thing. And people from Bridlepath Road have very great difficulty. They can't, mostly you can't turn right, except perhaps at night when there's not much traffic. When we have dodges about that, we go up, there's a little Fairy Mead terrace we can come off. And if you avoid having to do that, you're just at the foot of St Andrew's Hill and you watch carefully and you come up the hill.
Do you have any suggestion of how it might be better dealt with?
I haven't really initiated an overhead bypass on one of them, but that would be a colossal expense.
Mm.
It's likely to become more of a problem, really, isn't it?
It depends on the volume of the traffic.
Yeah, yeah. It's gradually getting worse.
Mm.
You notice it as the years go by, it's just getting worse all the time.
So given that this environment that you're living close to of the estuary is a waterway, wetlands in a city, do you feel that there is enough concern being taken about looking after it and making good use of it?
I feel that the amount of concern has increased and there have been improvements. There could be a lot more. It's an entirely different attitude from when I was young. It was just another stretch of water, and yes, it was polluted, and we put up with it. I think it's indicative of modern concern and so on, that there have been further attempts finally made to keep the water cleaner and to enable people to enjoy it too. And that matter of the walkway from Monk's Bay to Heathcote Bridge or somewhere in that line of thought. It's got a long way to go yet before it happens, but it would be a great thing. It wouldn't be cheap if they did it properly. But looking back on how the sea wall at Beachville Road was built, that was a huge improvement because that was just a dump along there. And as they built that wall slowly from the east end towards the west end, it's slowly, I think a certain amount of what they called relief work during the Depression got it finished, or progressed it anyway. That was a big step. The joke was that once they had the wall there and it wasn't quite finished and the water used to come in and make a great big long pool the full length of Beachville Road, which we kids could play in or even try and swim in. That big, great big long pool was very quickly ruined by the fact they decided it was a good dump. So all the rubbish got put in, as I think I mentioned earlier in our talks. But the finished job is a huge improvement on what the foreshore of Beachville Road was like when I was a kid.
And we've noticed the transformation of the little fishermen's cottages right round to Redcliffe's Township. Well, once upon a time you could have bought one of those places for a very small sum.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
now.
fairly upmarket houses built along there.
Mm.
Relative to what we've been talking about, I suppose, there was a family of Hines who were well known in the area. I don't know whether I mentioned it before, that they actually commercially fished. I think I did mention it, didn't I? Yes.
Briefly.
Mm. And they...
What sort of craft did they have?
Big rowing boats. Big, heavy rowing boats. About 14 feet, 15, maybe even a bit more than 14 feet. Where the pumping station is or was, I suppose it's still there, there was a sort of a little indentation in the shoreline, and they pulled these boats up in there. But any idea of commercially selling fish out of the estuary just faded when all the pollution started. But when I was a boy, it was clean enough to do that, and you could in a boat passing over the mud banks at high tide, you could look down, you could see the flounders going one way and the herrings going another way as the boat came along. I don't think there's much of them there now.
So was
those are a few.
In probably later years, there was a great interest for the local people, perhaps looking out over the estuary, keeping an eye on perhaps boats that were getting into difficulty, something like that. And I will remember an incident. I had some friends here for afternoon tea or something. It was a very windy, unpleasant day, and a neighbour over the road rang to say, "Oh, could we get in touch with Murray to get the rescue boat out? There was a boat in difficulties drifting over to the far shore." Remember that? And so I rang you, and you rushed home and got out and got the rescue boat out, and you got somebody to come and help you, and they went across and rescued the shivering people. I think whether the boat was upside down, I don't remember.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that it was the cooperation of people watching to see, you know, if anyone was in trouble and doing something about it.
Mm. It wasn't a day when the yacht club was
no,
in operation.
No, it was just a weekday.
You know, just a weekday.
But it's characteristic of living above the waterway.
You keep an eye on things.
Yes.
The same with the Nicholsons up on...
That's right.
Just above Shag Rock, right on that corner.
There were times when... I had to, I was already out sailing and somebody, it just happened quite frequently actually, and somebody capsized on an outgoing tide, and they get swept out past Shag Rock towards the bar, and we'd only just get out there in time and get them. Before they hit the bar, the breakers on the bar, they would be sometimes hanging on to their upturned boat, and sometimes they were just themselves. That was in the days when I was associated with the Christchurch Yacht Club, more so than up here. You wouldn't see it from up here, but. No, I can remember hauling several very unhappy people out of the water, and the idea was with on an outgoing tide you had to get them before you hit the breaker line or you'd be in trouble yourself. It's quite exciting.
There were two, we remember in our time, two men drowned out there. It was a larger vessel and they were trying to cross the bar and they got into difficulties.
Yes.
But,
now that's all the questions that I have for you. Is there anything that comes to mind that you'd like to add and talk about?
There probably will be when we've closed up the discussion, but no, I'd just like to say that apart from the part of my life where I lived on the West Coast and again up in Tauranga and so on, estuaries played a very important part in my thinking and my life and what I've enjoyed and what I've worried about and what I've been pleased about. Very much connected with the estuary, both through days at Christchurch Yacht Club and then at Mount Pleasant Yacht Club when we came to live here. It's a source of great interest, it's a source of great pleasure, and at times it was a source of great worry. Got involved a few times in pulling a few half-drowned rats out of the water before they hit the bar.
Well, it's just that it makes a very pleasing vista, and it's the ever-changing moods. It's never the same. And of course, with the hills behind us here, very close, and the highest part, Mount Pleasant, shelters us from some of the worst of the southerly winds, and very often we don't get the rain that's sweeping up over just over there, and we don't get it because of the shelter. Mind you, on other times we can get an easterly rain and it's not raining on the other side of the city. But by and large, it's a milder, benign climate here. We don't get very many frosts. And I think it's tempered by the stretch of water.
All right, well, thank you very much. I've enjoyed meeting you and sitting with you and hearing your various accounts.
We've enjoyed it ourselves. I only just wish that my memory had been better in that my memory's got worse in the last 3 or 4 years. Or last, I suppose the most noticeable change has been the last couple of years. Isn't it? Last couple of years have been the most notable change.
Oh, yes.
Well, I think I've said to you already that certainly the contribution that you've made is something that goes back in time considerably further than anyone else that I've met with and interviewed.
Yeah,
and so you do give a very individual perspective.
Yes.
So thank you very much.